Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Only since COVID has Tamsin Granger discovered walking art, but in that short time, she's made two sound walks, which have been shortlisted for the Sound Walk September Award, and she's also made many other works. A shiatsu practitioner, she bartered treatments for homestays on long-distance walks across Europe and became known on the Camino for helping with pulled muscles and tired legs. You can't help but be inspired by the story she tells. Okay, well, I'm actually walking with a twice shortlisted artist in the Sound Walk September Awards. But you've not been a sound artist or a walking artist for very long, is that right?
That's right. I'm very new to all of this. I just began in COVID, beginning of COVID, yeah.
You just began and yet you walk away with, you know, you get judged by the peers, a community of sound artists and walking artists, and your work is immediately shortlisted. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
I was really honoured. I've only made two sound walks, and those are them.
Tell us a little bit about why and you chose to make sound walks, even. Let's start there rather than just the walking art.
Because I was walking round and round like so many of us did during COVID, and we have this amazing network of cycle paths in Edinburgh. So walking along the routes that the trains used to take through the tunnels. And, of course, every circuit you make, you notice something different. And I noticed these hooks running along the length of a long tunnel. And immediately something jumped into my mind, which is the way it happens with me. Later, of course, I worked on it and reworked it, but it was sort of there straight away.
And what was that, then?
A sense that as I was walking towards the tunnel, I was taken with the cacophony of bird song, and in the tunnel I could hear nothing. And as I got out the other end, they were luckily still there. And of course, I'm very much taken up with the climate crisis and the emergency that our birds have with places to live and the deaths of our birds, and it all came together just in a moment.
So perhaps you explain to a listener who's not yet listened to your work, what did you do? It's very good, we got birdsong in the background here. So
lovely. No Birds Land is the title of the walk, the first walk I made in the Trinity Tunnel in Edinburgh. I guess it's a sort of sound poem. There are QR codes on street signs at the front and back ends of the tunnel, so you can cycle or walk through and use your mobile phone to listen to the sound as you walk through the tunnel. The basic premise is that in the 2 minutes it takes to walk through the tunnel, two pairs of breeding birds will disappear. And the poem is almost a nonsense poem. On first hearing, I spent many hours lying on my back listening to birds singing and translating them into human language, as we humans have a tendency to see everything from our own perspective, and particularly the warning calls of the birds. And so that's the sound aspect, and there's a visual art little installation as well, which is a series of pennants, like a bunting, which is the name of the little bird, and which used to be hung on the steam railways going back in time. So it was a bit of a nod to the railways there, strung along these metal hooks where the wires would have been strung by the railway. So it's a sort of visual and sound piece installation.
I mean, just in the making of it, I mean, you know, did you have to get permissions from people who own the tunnel and that sort of thing, or did you just sort of get on with it?
Well, yes, bit of a wry grin there. Yes, I tried. I did try. I assumed I would because I knew I wanted to put up signs. Originally, I wanted wooden signs because I didn't want to use non-natural materials. And I discovered the ground is owned by one set of people and the signposts are owned by somebody else and the tunnel is owned by somebody else. So it was a very long process of endless contact with these various bodies. First of all, to find that out and then to try to get permission, followed by getting angry and writing to all my MPs, who all wrote back, bar one. So I was very... I chose the sort of eco-representative for the Green Party, for the SNP, etc. And eventually, when I was despairing and the deadline was coming closer, I had a phone call, sort of anonymous, in inverted commas, from a city council official who said, it will take you several years to get permission if you get it. If I were you, I would just go ahead. And I already had funding in place from Sustrans, who are involved in these green walkways, and the RSPB, both of whom gave me money without any strings attached, on receipt of a simple email and a phone call. So I just went ahead and did it.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And then the following year, was it the following year?
Yes.
It was. You did one where we listened to a wall.
Yes. So, again, just born out of my local walks around and around my area, which is a high-intensity development area. It belongs... absolutely, as the train lines and train tunnels do, to the community. There is a rich, rich history of the harbour of Granton, where I live, has been ripped out about 99.9%. There is one section of track left because there were two railways running on either side of it, and the wall. And the wall was built during the war as some form of protection. Very difficult to find out very much about it at all. And it runs along the western harbour. There are three arms to the harbour. And it is now all but impossible to reach. But it was, during COVID, frequented by dog walkers and people like me without dogs as a place where wildflowers popped their heads up and where we could be a little bit away from the noise of the traffic, but beside the sea. So, yes, I was very much taken up with this new building development. I'd been trying to make contact with the developers who wouldn't answer my emails. I'd been going to public consultations and so on, and listening to members of the community who were lost, literally lost, because they have done things like renamed the streets, renamed the stations by a different name, so that the older people who knew the old area... they have no idea where they are. And at the same time, these high-rise blocks are going up on the reclaimed land. That's it. So the middle harbour is called by the name of a tree that would never in a million years be able to be there because there's no depth of soil, for example. Bizarre. And I walked up and down this wall, and I'm a very small person, but even, I think, Andrew, you would struggle to see over it. And I started hearing the voice of the wall. Well, I suppose me and the wall. But the voice, I just heard it in my head, this voice of this very autocratic wall that was is very proud of its provenance. It's very closely linked to the Berlin Wall and other very important walls, like in Belfast, which divides the two communities, Catholic and Protestant. And here it was, overseeing the new development. It will have seen what went before there and what's happening now. And it has a very strong voice.
And now it's not possible to get there because the developers have sort of fenced it off, have they?
Well, they did. And there was a period where I would go regularly and either have to move temporary fences aside, which lots of dog walkers do that for me, which is very good of them, and periods where we couldn't get through at all. Last week on the beach, I bumped into somebody who I sort of... occasionally swim with, and she said, I had visitors come up from England and we were going to the National Gallery, but we were all a bit late getting up, so we went to listen to the wall instead. And I said, well, could you find it? And she said, yeah, we had to move the fences We had to move them away so we could get through, and we had to search for the QR code. It had been knocked down, and they all listened to the wall, walked up and down, and she said, yeah, they whiled away an interesting couple of hours for all ages, she said, as well. She said the kids really enjoyed it as well as the adults. So I was very touched.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, so you were saying earlier on that you only just sort of came into walking art yourself. I mean, so what was the inspiration for walking art? And what's Tamsin Granger been doing in the background? Why hasn't she been a walking artist for far longer?
Well, I have a great inheritance, as I believe many women do, certainly in my family, of being a carer. So although I trained as a dancer and had aspirations as a 20-something to make art, in those days it would have been choreography, in fact I immediately fell into community art, enabling other people to do it, and then in fact switched almost completely to shiatsu, which I've been doing for 30 years. So very much one-to-one therapeutic work, group therapeutic work, running a school, and all the time a hidden part of me that was not being heard until thank you, COVID. See, COVID was a great release. I had left home in Edinburgh to go to Greece to teach and went via my mother's, because she lives not far from Gatwick Airport, and got locked down with her for 5 months. And
I'm not sure whether that was a blessing or not.
Well, it was.
It was a blessing.
It was, yes. And I walked and walked and walked, as so many of us did in those days. And I had come across Walk, Listen, Create. So I had heard a Walk, Listen, Create cafe with Claudia, who had done a long walk from her home, I think it was in Germany, to
Scotland. Yes, that's Claudia
Zajewski. Yeah. That's it. And sent a postcard each day to her mother. And so that gave me the idea. Well, I was walking around and around Kent, which was my home county, but not the village where I was born. So I collected a feather every day. There was a dovecote that I visited on one of my circuits. So I laid these feathers out on the bed that I wasn't sleeping in, and labelled them all, and day by day by day, and until an idea came, which was to make a dovecot. It's called Clipped Wings, because, of course, we couldn't fly. We couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't fly. And I made this huge dovecot and positioned the feathers in the windows of the dovecot. I put out a call on Twitter, because by then I was walking the distance drift with Sonia Overall every Sunday, and very inspired by feeling connected with other walking artists who I'd never heard of before. So I put a call out on Twitter, of course, it was all about birds, again, saying, please finish this sentence. If I had wings, I would. And different people answered it in very different ways. And I wrote them in tiny, tiny, tiny text on little tiny bits of paper and wrapped them around the feather, the shafts of the feathers, like the carrier pigeons that used to be used again during the war. And so these feathers stand. They stood there waiting for COVID to end, when we could fly again. And then I realised that it was sadly still very important job that these feathers are holding people's wishes, because although we all promised we wouldn't start to fly again, in fact, many of us are, I'm not, but lots of people are feeling that need to spread our wings. So actually the clipped wings feathers still stand as sentinels for this wish we originally had, to keep the skies quiet. You remember how taken we all were in the UK by the sounds of the birds. And the lack of sound of traffic, and both air and traffic
and it was
traffic.
Incredible for us who, you know, are kind of into radio and podcasting and audio recording. It was an incredible opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely. So I was glued to my laptop and listening to my Walk, Listen, Create cafes, and following, of course, all the leads of all the names I was starting to discover, and walking, walking, walking every day. I had already started walking.
Well, the next thing I'm coming on to is that you are not shy for stepping out and walking considerable distances, and also as a woman travelling on your own. So
that's right.
Tell us a little bit about how that's evolved.
Yes, I love to do that. I think like a number of women my age, I had a bit of a crisis in my early 50s, aware that the women in my family have often lived until they're 100, that I had another 50 years ahead of me, and that I didn't want to repeat or the 50 years I just had, that I wanted, you know, this was an opportunity. My children left home, they flew away. I was, I'm sorry to say, getting bored with my work, not because I didn't believe in it, but because it somehow wasn't speaking to that artist part of me. And after an enormous amount of soul searching, I decided to take a 3-month sabbatical and went to Spain. All I had was my hands, my shiatsu hands, so I bartered shiatsu for a bed and travelled around northern Spain until I got to Pamplona, and that's on the Camino. And I'd heard about the Camino because two separate solo women many years before had told me about their short walks on the Camino, and I had been really inspired by those women, and I'd filed away a wish in the back of my mind to do that, but actually I had no idea what was really entailed. 5 weeks later I arrived in Santiago, so that was my first long walk with a very big community of walkers, because that particular Camino, what people think of as the Camino, is very busy. But I really had the bug. It was December, and I didn't have to be home. I hadn't told anybody when I was coming back. I didn't have a return date, and so I carried on walking down towards Seville, thinking, without again really looking very carefully, that it was fine. I could just walk in that direction, away from Santiago. But in fact, as we all know, all roads do lead to Santiago, and trying to walk backwards along a Camino is really, really difficult. And if I hadn't have met a couple of people from SEUI, which is the French for threshold, it's an organisation, Parisian organisation, that takes young offenders walking for 3 months on the Camino. Mm. Young offenders who are about to move into adult jail are given the opportunity to walk long distance instead. And if they do their penance, not that it's described as that, they are rehabilitated, and they have the most amazing results of young people who have been dealt very difficult hands and responded in a very violent way, often walking and walking on a one-to-one basis. I met a couple, and luckily the woman who was walking with this, the young offender, the young woman, knew the Caminos like the back of her hand and was able to walk backwards along the route. But I was so badly lost. At the middle of December, I hit the mountains and the snow was coming, and I decided, well, I was pushed, really. I was told, enough is enough. So I stopped there, but I went back the following March and started in Seville and walked 1,000 kilometres to Santiago, and then I walked the Via Sacra in Austria, three sacred mountains. I'm not a religious person, so it's not a religious pilgrimage, it's secular. But I got the bug.
I mean, that's further than I've probably walked in the last 10 years. I feel terribly embarrassed.
It feels like I've been saving it all up and it just all suddenly sort of spewed out of me at one go.
I mean, I'm being like, wait, hang on a moment, these numbers are huge. And, so you've been bartering shiatsu for bedding, but I mean, you've also been obviously carrying
sometimes
a tent.
Sometimes when I travelled in on Orkney, I was camping, carrying a tent. And in Ireland, I carried a tent. Yes, so in some places, but actually, I'm a diminutive person, and I can't really manage a tent plus everything else, especially if it's in winter, so because of the extra clothes you have to carry. So I haven't done as much of that as I have done of warmer walking weather, to be honest, which means I stay in hostels if I can't find somebody to barter with. But people are amazing. They respond. I use social media. Again, for me, social media works has always been a real, really fantastic networking tool. And so I put out a bid. I say, I'll be in Budapest in such and such a time. Anybody fancy shiatsu, if they can offer me a sofa or a bed? And very often they do. And I'm such a wonderful way to get to know people, such a personal way.
And those people who maybe listen to this and say, always say, what's she up to? I mean, just quickly, it's a hands-on therapy.
Yes, it's a hands-on Japanese, Chinese, Southeast Asian-inspired therapy. You don't take your clothes off for shiatsu, which makes it very much easier to actually give it on the path. You know, if I come across somebody, well, what happens is that the word goes out that I do shiatsu along the path, and if somebody's got an injury, then the word comes back to me. Will I stop at the next stop, and can I help this person with shin splints or something? And I've had some lovely experiences of kneeling down in bars amongst the fag ends, massaging people's legs and feet just to, just in the hope that maybe I can support them a little bit, and they get able to get up the next morning, and then they send back to me the next day a room in a B&B, for example, or something. I don't ask for any money, and
Are you journaling this? Are we going to have a non-fiction bestseller on the Sunday Times bestseller list?
Well, it's very hard to get a book published. I have written a book about my St. Magnus Way on Orkney, yes. And I have a blog, walkingwithoutadonkey.com. So there's a lot of information out there from me. But I would dearly love to get the book published. I'm working with a mentor now to try and boost my confidence to send it out to publishers, because there's been a real surge of interest in pilgrimage.
You're showing that you know by giving a generous gift you can receive, and the stories that come with it is amazing.
Oh, the kindness. Oh, I can't tell you, Andrew, the kindness. It really, when I left that first time for Spain, I was at a very low ebb, and I didn't believe that there was any kindness left in the 21st century world anymore, in the Western world anyway, and I was completely wrong. It's a joy. People are wonderful. I have almost never had any trouble, and I don't know why that is, but I am so grateful, and it is such a lovely thing to do, to walk from place to place. I've discovered, this is one of the things the book's about, that there is a tradition of walking healers. There used to be nuns. In Japan, there used to be shiatsu practitioners who were sent out by the government to walk from village to village to give shiatsu. And so I feel I'm part of some quite long-standing tradition. I don't call myself a healer, but that's the terminology that was used in the early medieval days and so on. So, yeah.
Any advice for other women who might want to step out and go walking?
Yes, find a way. There is a way to do it, and you don't have to do it on your own. There are wonderful groups that will take you, that organise trails for you and carry your bags, but there are also places you can go safely on your own. And so often women do contact me when they see my blog and say, well, I would love to do that, but of course I can't. And I would say, play it out in your imagination first. See, is it really impossible, or is it possible to find a way of doing it somehow?
And now I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you to suggest a couple of walks that you could recommend people perhaps consider walking themselves.
Oh, yes. Yes, at the St. Magnus Way on Orkney is fantastic. It's what I call a bijou camino. It's a week long at the most. You can walk it if you have money or if you don't. The people of Orkney are some of the kindest in the world, and the spectacular scenery will just blow your head, blow your mind. And you can get there by public transport. I don't suggest you fly. Part of the walk is to leave your doorstep, take a slow route, take your time if you possibly can, and walk and discover not the standing stones or the other famous parts of Orkney, but the space between villages, the space around the edge and across the mainland, and the island of Eggleszy, which is where St. Magnus was supposed to have been killed, which I found a very poignant place to reflect on some of the griefs of my life and so on, which is a connection that, with the book that I've written before about death and loss.
Okay, and a second one?
So the second one, I would say, come out of your doorstep, turn round and walk, and try that walk and see where it takes you. The psychogeographer in me would say, sidle between houses, step across a curb, move your way through whatever space you have outside your front door and make a walk. Wander a walk, that's what I would say.
Great. Thanks very much, Tamlin.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Tamsin Granger. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZtronic.